Welcome to the Hands On Business Podcast. Where else are you going to come to get tips, tricks, and advice on growing your business? Now, as you know, what people tend to love about this podcast is there's a place where you can hear real business leaders discussing systems, methodologies, and strategies that they have used to help them catapult growth in their business. That's why one of my latest five-star ratings by Tories Made said, really spot on, business is calling, right? You need insights that are actionable, understandable, and quickly applicable. And that's the Hands-On Business Podcast with Hakeem Adebiyi. He shares his extensive experience and helps you achieve with your company. It comes across quickly in his voice that he greatly enjoys what he's doing, and he provides quality instruction in the business of success in a highly compact format. Couldn't have written it better if I'd written it myself, and I didn't even have to bribe them to give me that reference. So thank you very much, Tories Made. That's exactly what I'm trying to deliver on this show. So I'm your podcast host, Hakeem Adebiyi, and I've grown several small businesses to multi-million pound enterprises and noticed that there wasn't really any place focused on where I was, i.e. growing a small business. All the content that I used to listen to or watch on YouTube, etc., seemed to be about big business and often just a lot of theory and not practical implemental advice. And today we're going to carry on that vein, and we talk to Veronica Woods Corrales, business owner, marketeer, mentor, and inspirational young lady who is going to talk to us about how you can maximize social media in your business. Veronica will talk about, among other things, how to use social media to promote your own personal brand, how to think of ideas for content when you're busy, and how to decide which platform to focus on. Happy listening. Delighted to have Veronica Woods Corrales on the show today. Whilst Veronica is brilliant in her own right, and I'll be telling you more about that in a moment, she's also just happens to be the daughter of one of the most inspirational managers and coaches that I have ever worked with, Ollie Corrales. Now, so that means that I met Veronica when she was just a little girl, actually, many, many moons ago. And I'm not going to say how many moons ago, because then that obviously dates me and ages me. But at that point, you know, Ollie, her mum, was my manager. So this is very special for me, actually, because firstly, to see how well Veronica's done in her own career, and also to be interviewing one of my mentor's daughters, which is obviously not something that you necessarily think is going to happen. So I obviously know where Veronica gets all her skills from. So on to Veronica. She is a CIM qualified marketer and an ILM certified mentor. And for the past 14 years, she's been working with startups and growing businesses across a variety of industries. And her core areas of expertise we're getting into today are marketing strategy, campaigns, copywriting, PR, and mentoring, and I'm sure many other things. Now, 2 and a bit years ago, she set up her own agency called Into the Woods Marketing. And today we're going to be mining her brain on how you maximize social media for business. So welcome, Veronica.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. It's really fun hearing that story about, how we know each other.
Oh, yes. And I was speaking to, I was speaking to your mum just the other day. And we were reminiscing, and your mum was, because she's just slightly older than me, she was saying, oh, but you're still a young man. And when I told her my age, she nearly had a heart attack. Because she still feeds me as that young, fresh-faced boy that she was about to dig, and had obviously forgotten how many years have passed. But such is life.
We all see ourselves in that way, I think, as eternally young, don't we? So,
yes. Unfortunately, we're not. So on to today. So tell me a bit about Into the Woods and exactly what you do.
So, I'm a marketing consultant, and I am a B2B marketing consultant, which means that I work with businesses. I don't do consumer marketing just purely because that's my background. So my background, I've worked with lots of healthcare businesses, lots of healthcare tech businesses. I've worked in property as well. So when it came to starting my own business, I just went with the contacts that I'd already made and the knowledge that I already had. So I just reached a point in my career where I was head of marketing. I managed a team. It was really stressful. I'd always wanted to go out on my own. It was just a matter of finding the right time. I actually picked the worst time possible because I handed in my notice 2 weeks before COVID kicked off. I'd secured one client at that point and I was on 12 weeks notice. But I thought, no, you've planned this, you know, you've got the domain name and you've got the client secured and you've quit your job. And it took me about 4 weeks to build up the courage to actually hand in my notice and call it a day. So I stuck with it and actually it worked out really, really well. Because, yeah, every month has just been better and better since then.
What would you say you found the most significant difference? Because you're obviously talking about managing the team and then moving across to managing your own business, which has its own challenges. What would you say was been the biggest difference in those two roles?
I think it's being, feeling very, very, very responsible for my own income. So much so that I think that's what really, I mean, still drives me now, but it really drove me in the first months. It was that feeling of, right, if I don't go out and win some business and do some work, I'm not going to pay my mortgage. You know, I can't buy groceries and the whole thing is going to fall apart. And obviously when you're employed, you do have a responsibility and you have targets and so on. But in most cases, you get paid the end of the month on a set date. You know when you're getting paid, you know how much you're going to get paid. And generally, you know, you can rely on that, obviously, with lots of caveats. I think the biggest difference was just that responsibility and knowing that I had to go and do it. But like I said, it actually really drove me at first. I found it quite exciting. I sort of leaned into it and thought, right, let's go and do this.
Now, it's interesting because obviously some people are cut out for it. I mean, some people aren't, because some people find the actual thought of working on their own, just as you said, they're not getting a salary every single month at that specific day, absolutely terrifying. Whereas from what you're saying, you know, which is the case with lots of people, especially the ones that do who are successful, they actually enjoy it. And they, I'm not saying they enjoy not having the income all the time, because everyone wants an income, but I think that being your own boss, having that responsibility, I think lots of people who do it really do it for that ability to manage their own time and manage their own destiny, I suppose, would be way to put it. So in terms of the agency, because there's loads of agents out there, you know it, you know, when you're head of marketing, you'd have probably worked with some. So yes. How does Into the Woods differ from the thousands of agents out there, you know, i.e. what's the USP? Why would, if I'm looking for a marketing agency or I'm looking for someone to help my social media, why would I choose you and not one of the other thousands out there?
Yeah, so the stage that my business is now, I think the customers that I have, they either know me or they've been recommended by someone that knows me. So they really buy into me. And, you know, I don't know if that's going to change in 5, 10, 15 years time, if it expands, for example. But at the moment, I think it's definitely very much, if you like me and you like my approach, then that tends to be what seals the deal. I've got some very random specific experience. So for example, I've worked in some very sort of niche healthcare tech businesses. So that's been quite good, because then former employees have said, oh, can you come do some work with us? Because we know that you understand that market really, really well. Likewise, I used to work in property. I know a lot about leasehold. So that's been another area where I've had a few clients say, oh, you know a lot about that. So, you know, we want to work with you. But I think certainly, as it's the case for a lot of consultants, people tend to buy into you. You the brand, I think, is the main driver.
Okay, thank you. So in other words, having expertise in certain areas is obviously always going to enable you to get specific work, I suppose, because especially in healthcare is an interesting one, because that's obviously my area. And I think that certainly we're going to talk about it when you start talking about social media and you start talking about just branding. It's slightly different depending on what industry you're in, and a lot of people don't really understand healthcare, because I've used lots of different consultants, and the amount of time you have to spend explaining how it works, what you can say, what you can't say, the way to approach it is quite tiring. So if you can find someone who actually understands it already, then that already puts your head and shoulders above, I would say, a lot of people. So, I mean, we're obviously going to be talking about social media today, because obviously it's very important. And I would say that lots of businesses still don't understand how to utilize it effectively in their business, which is why I invited you on. to actually shed some light on the area. So what would you say is the benefit of social media over other forms of marketing? Because there's obviously lots of things you can do when you have a marketing budget. Why would you suggest that maybe social media is an important part of that marketing mix?
So if we go to our marketing foundations, we always look at where is your audience. And certainly in, 2022, most businesses are going to have an audience on one of the social media platforms. So that's the main driver, really. It's another channel and a way of reaching the people that you want to get to.
So why do you think it is that, I'm not going to say they don't, but certainly in a healthcare environment, I've noticed that people are very reticent to use social media. And when if you look at most healthcare social media, it's very bland. It doesn't really often represent that brand. Is there any reason that you think or anyone's ever spoken to you about why they don't use social media in the way that you think it could be most utilized, bearing in mind what you just said, that a lot of people's audience is on social media?
Yeah, so I think sometimes we forget that there was a very, very, very long time where businesses ran without social media. It's relatively recent. I mean, I'm not going to share my age, but at the very start of my career, it wasn't really a thing for business. I remember introducing social media for business 3 or 4 years into my career, which actually it's not that long ago. It's within sort of my lifespan. So I've worked with loads of businesses that have come to me with absolutely no marketing whatsoever, and they've been doing absolutely fine without it, mostly because they've had a really, really good product, which has almost sold itself, or they've relied on traditional forms of marketing. And I often get asked the same question with them. It's like, why should we be on social media? So and what I always say to them is, I think it's just a really nice layer to add on top of what you're already doing. There probably is an audience that you're not reaching because they haven't heard about you. And very often the reason that they haven't been doing it is they haven't got a marketing person, either in-house or outsourced. Nobody, in-house wants to do it, and they've just, sort of got along without it just fine. So I do think there are businesses that can carry on doing that, but they're missing a trick, I think, because there's definitely, a slice of the pie that they're not getting by not being on there. And the other thing is that you do have to invest a certain amount of time on it. You don't need to be on it every day. I'm on it every day for all my various clients, but certainly, up front, you want to look at, branding your profile page and looking at your messaging and planning some content and getting the scheduling tool in place. As soon as you say that, it can feel like quite a lot of work. And then, things have got to go through for approval. And I just think people see that work and just think, oh no, I don't want to do it.
I mean, it's interesting though, isn't it? Because I mean, you mentioned it now, saying the clients that you've got because of your personal contact. The old adage in sales and marketing is, people first. And social media is probably one of the most personal aspects of a marketing platform that you can actually really get your personality or the brand's personality out there. So that's why I always find it quite strange that, people, there are always some like relationships, even when you're doing sales, it's building rapport. Well, build face-to-face, if you're face-to-face, that's fine. But obviously, if you've got thousands or hundreds of thousands of customers, then you can't do face-to-face with everybody as you'd like to do. Whereas social media always seemed to me like, well, that's effectively just amplifying what I would normally do in a face-to-face call, because I can do videos, I can do things which are very personal, which you can do face-to-face. You struggle to do it on any other kind of media, I've found. Yeah, it's just interesting because specifically in the healthcare sector, I know that people are always seem very reticent to really do it to the level that I think it should be done, which is one of the reasons why I'm doing this. That trying to shine a light on it and say it's not, I'm not saying it's easy because it's not, but actually it's something that you should be doing, and it's not that difficult if you either follow what you're going to tell us or actually you get somebody like you to do it. So
yeah.
In terms of when we're getting into the social media, because you talked about your profile page. So is it, if you're in a business and it's a small business, what's the most important thing to brand? Is it you as a brand, as in your personal brand, or is it focusing on the business brand? That's always an interesting one. And just to illustrate, for example, if you're looking at, I'll just take LinkedIn at this stage, and we'll probably talk about it a bit further, but you know, if you're you tend to have a business page and then you have your own personal profile, would you suggest that you'll be doing both of those, i.e. your brand, you've got a nice brand page for your business, but then how, what you do with your personal, is that brand inextricably linked to the brand, or are you trying to do something different?
So if you go onto any, refer to any LinkedIn expert or do some research, it will always say to you that people get way more interaction than pages. And I've definitely felt that's the case with the, you know, dozens of clients that I've worked with on LinkedIn. And just anecdotally, it makes complete sense. We're much more likely as humans to interact with other humans than we are with, you know, a faceless company page. The other thing is that on LinkedIn, a company page is a broadcast tool. You know, you can't message that company. You can't get in touch with them. If there's a button saying get in touch, most likely it'll route you to a form or through the website. So I've worked with lots of founders who've been really reluctant to develop their personal brand on LinkedIn, and they're really, really missing a trick, because that's, I think, where the magic happens. You can use your page as you would do, for example, a company newsletter. So you can share, you know, job openings that you've got, and you can share company news and company stats and customer quotes and all those sorts of things that we see all the time. But I think, you know, the brand story, the reason why we're doing things, the wins, the lessons that we've learned, that should come from the people in your business. And the best brands that I've seen are where, you know, the CEO is doing that on a regular basis and then everybody else is too. And the algorithm on LinkedIn really rewards that as well. So that'll get a much bigger reach than anything that you do on a company page.
Oh, that's very useful. And would that then, so let's take that as a perfect example. So you're now, you've got a brand, you're just doing your broadcast stuff on your company page, and then you've got, let's say you've got 10, 20 employees. Would you then get them to brand or brand in a similar way? So there's a consistency, or would you, or is it better to have it separate and they're individuals?
Yeah. So what I normally do if I'm working with a client, we either done a rebrand or I've just started working with them, is we strongly encourage really good headshots. I think that has changed a lot over the past few years. I think the days of sort of plain background corporate headshots are definitely gone, but you know, it needs to be something which is, you know, clear and colourful and interesting. If you can get a company sort of a photo shoot for the day where everyone has their headshot done, that's a wonderful thing to do, but obviously not all businesses do that. And I normally send out header graphics. I'll send out 3 or 4 different designs so that not every single one is the same, and people can put that on their profiles as well. I do think a really nicely branded profile makes a really big impression. I think it's no different to when you go into a meeting and someone makes a really, really good impression, or you go on a Zoom and someone's got a really nice background. It's whether we like it or not, I think those first impressions really count.
No, that's fine. That's very useful. But how do you decide which platform that you need to be on? Or do you need to be on every one of them?
Definitely don't be on every single one. I'd say pick the most relevant one and do it well. And the most relevant one is the one where your audience is. So I remember, I don't know, when I was a younger marketer, I'd have someone come in to be going, why aren't we on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and everything else? And in most businesses, so in this case, you know, it's like a healthcare tech business, they don't need to be on Facebook. I think there's also the argument that your customer probably are on Facebook or Instagram, but it's in a very personal capacity and they don't want their work life intruding on that either. So for example, you know, I've got an Instagram account and it's my cat and it's the gigs that I go to. I don't really want my work life on there. I don't want to see adverts for things to do with work. It's a complete separation for me. I know that all my clients are on LinkedIn and I put all my effort into there in terms of, you know, as a social channel. So if, for example, you've got an e-commerce brand and you're selling eco-friendly, sustainable goods, Instagram probably is the one for you. If you've got Gen Z customers and you're happy to be on video, then go ahead and explore TikTok, for example. I think being on every single platform, like you can, but you will spend an awful lot of time creating different content for each platform and you'll spread yourself so thin, there's a good chance that you're going to spend a fortune trying to do it, or you'll not do it very well. Well, actually, you could have just picked one and said, right, I'm going to do that really, really well and be a success on that.
So I suppose it comes down to step one is really understand which standard marketing but would be understand the audience, isn't it? So you need to know who your audience is, who your target audience is, and know where they actually, from a business, well, from an interaction point of view of what you're trying to achieve, where those people are. Because you're 100% right. You know, I remember working in a business, maybe the healthcare business actually, and I remember we went to a conference and our marketeers at that point were trying to do every platform. And then we just asked the people in that meeting, oh, so where do you do most of your interaction? And they all said Twitter. And we at that point, no one was using, as in the business, was using Twitter. And oh, no, there must be on LinkedIn. And all the customers said, no, we get all of our information on Twitter, which is quite unusual, actually, business point of view, I found. But that we then pivoted and started doing a lot more content on Twitter, because up to that point, we didn't even really look at it. And actually, that leads me on to the next question. When you're crafting your content, because obviously on, if you look on LinkedIn again, LinkedIn, it says, when you want to share some content, it says, do you want to share it to LinkedIn and also Twitter? Is that a sensible thing to do, i.e., because you just said there about seeing different content for different platforms, but if you automate some stuff or you've got it in LinkedIn, you can automatically just share it in different platforms. But is that the right thing to do, or should we really homing in on doing different things on different platforms?
I would always tweak it slightly. So I'm not on Facebook anymore, but I am on Twitter, just hanging in there. And the way that people speak on Twitter for business is very different to how they speak on LinkedIn. Also, this is like a tiny thing, but you have to break up normally your post into threads as well, so it's a little bit shorter and snappier. So I would always say, if you've got the time, definitely spend 5 minutes just tweaking the content slightly. I think that's a worthwhile use of 2 or 3 minutes when you're going to go and post something.
Yes. Okay. So that's quite useful to know, because I think lots of people think, oh, well, I've got a piece of content, I put it on Twitter, so I'm just, well, it's probably a better example, so sure, but I put it on Facebook, I'm just going to copy and paste that and stick it on LinkedIn and stick it on it wherever else I can. Well, you're saying is actually, again, similar to the audience, because you've got different kind of audience on each of those platforms, you need to either write or pictorially or video it slightly different, so it actually fits in with that platform and the sorts of ways that they take in their information. So in terms of, you know, we always say the old adage, content is king. But it's also very time consuming. And that's probably one of the other reasons why people are so nervous about social media. Because as you said, you know, when you tell people, they all start, and you start talking about content plans and, you know, crafting your profile, people start, you know, that's a lot more work than I thought it was. So how do you think for ideas for content? Because the content is a critical piece, isn't it, on social media?
Yeah, so most people have got this amazing wealth of information in their heads. So, you know, I've been sat in meetings where I've seen two people have a really interesting conversation and I think, oh, that I've made really, really great content for LinkedIn because what they're talking about is really, really interesting. But then as soon as you say yes, people, they sort of freeze and go, oh, but I need to check it and it needs to be perfect. It needs to be this and this and this. I would say, again, like everything else, so go back a step. I think if you're either struggling for ideas or you've got loads of ideas, I would say maybe pick 2 or 3 things that you want to be really well known for. So in my case, it's very simple. I want to be known for marketing. I post about marketing. Mentoring, I post about coaching, mentoring, and I post quite a lot about what it's like to run a small business. And those are the 3 things that I focus on. It's very rare that I'll stray outside of those lines. So I'd say, first of all, pick. And they can be as broad as that. So, for example, it could be I want to talk about healthcare, sales, and coaching. It works in any industry. Then a tool that I've started using in recent years, which I found really, really useful, is something called Otter. And the URL is otter.ai. And this is a transcription tool. So you can speak into it and it basically transcribes what you're saying. So whenever I'm interviewing somebody for an article or a case study, I have it on my phone and it just records the entire conversation and then spits out the text about 5 minutes later. I can go in, tidy it up, and then either use that as an article or I can chop it up into smaller bits and social posts. So what I would suggest is teaming up with somebody else. Either they can ask you questions, so you're sort of being interviewed, and you can do that for 20 minutes and produce, you know, a number of social posts off the back of that. Or you can do it as a duo, so you can interview each other. Or, I mean, you can do it yourself, but it can feel a bit strange at first. So it's quite a nice thing. You know, it doesn't have to be someone that knows your business. It can be a family member or someone that lives with you, and you can just give them a list of questions and say, just interview me and let me just talk about the things that I know. So once you've got that, you can tidy it up, take out all the sort of extra words and the fluff, and you'll have, you know, several paragraphs of really nice social posts that you can use. So that's one of my favorite things that you can use to get started. Yeah, it's really cool.
and we were just talking about off camera, weren't we, about actually repurposing material, because I think, as you said, lots of people have, or most people, especially if they're running a business or they're leading a business or they're coaching a business, will have lots of things, ideas running through their mind, and it's about finding ways to get it out. And I think that, you know, some people like to write stuff down, some people don't like to write some stuff down. So if you don't like writing, can say, as in, I'm going to sit down and write a blog, that transcription tool is a great idea, because most people are having conversations either, as you said, within the family, but with business and different areas, or even just thinking about it. And I think actually having a transcription to the great idea.
And there's loads of places online which will give you, you know, 10 writing prompts if you can't think of the question yourself. But, you know, the questions could be things like, how did you get your first job? What's your biggest challenge at work been? How did you overcome it? It's very much like the, you know, going for a job interview, actually. It's those type of questions that I do think, and most people will have a really interesting story, you know, in response to one of those themes.
So yeah, so just to recap, so in terms of the content, I'm going to say again, content is king or queen, but content is important, and that's what drives social media, is good content. So what you're saying was pick two or three things that you really want to be known for, and then focus on writing posts or videos around that sort of content, so your content becomes firstly consistent, but also it's about an area that you want to be known as an expert for. And then you were saying that use Otter as the transcription tool, which I'm gonna start using. In fact, I found the tool, I can't remember what it's called actually. I was looking for a tool just to do, because when I do quite a few videos, and it's quite irritating sometimes, because I might video on my phone, and then I have to put it into an editing software. And then I take it from there. Then I have to again get, you know, I've got another system that does the transcription from it or the subtitles from it. And I'm using Max 3 tools. And I was looking, even when I was an older, actually, because I thought I'd brought taking my laptop, and I found one for my phone, which basically puts the script, auto cue, that's it. And it basically puts it into the template. You put your script in there, and then you just read it off. And it actually, so you actually then look at the camera when you're speaking to it, and it have like add subtitles in. And that's revolutionized my life, because it just means that you can do videos on the go. You don't need all the editing software. So I think tools like any sort of tool that you can get can allow you to create content. So I think, as you were saying there, find something that you enjoy doing, whether that's videos, because people love doing videos, if it's talking, transcription, if it's writing transcription, it's very easy to do it. And you can be on the moves. And if you like writing, well, that's great. You can just write stuff down, can't you? So is there any specific kind of content that you think resonates the most, or again, is that depending on your business?
Yeah, it really does depend. I think most content on the internet in general, I can't remember the stat, but I think it's something like 70% maybe is rubbish and never gets read, and people actually completely ignore it. There's actually a very small amount of useful content on the internet as a whole, never mind, you know, coming down to what a business is putting out. What I found looking at sort of the analytics of work that I've done, the things that perform best are just where there's a really good story or there's really good content. unfortunately, there's normally things that we have to promote whether we want to or not. Obviously, not everything you do can be absolutely amazing. But generally, if you're excited by something and it's a really good story or there's a really good deal in it, then that is normally the thing that comes across the best. And the format can vary. I think, you know, there's various ways that you can think, oh, I can cheat the algorithm. But some of the best pieces of content that I've worked on with customers have been the things that are the opposite of the algorithm, but the content was really good. And obviously good is incredibly subjective. And sometimes things that we think are good don't land very well because the timing's wrong. And sometimes things that we do really quickly and throw together are actually really, really successful. I think the key is just to keep doing things and keep testing and sort of make note of what's landing with your audience.
And then the question I suppose that leads on from that is, how often should you be putting content out there on social media? Because obviously some of these people are putting stuff out every day and actually quite a lot of content every day. Some people put it out once a week, etc. So what would you say is the sweet spot, or again, is it very individual?
Yeah, it's really individual. Like, you'll definitely, like, so again, LinkedIn algorithm trends say posting every day is a really good thing. So posting more than once a day, what will happen is your reach will get spread throughout all of those posts. So posting multiple times a day on LinkedIn is not a good idea. Obviously on Instagram stories or Twitter, that would be different because you can do hundreds if you really, really want to. I always say to my clients, just bear in mind how much resource that's going to take and also what's the bigger picture in terms of your marketing plan. So for example, you could in theory pay me to post every single day on your company LinkedIn pages and work with the founders to do all of their posts. There's a good chance that will be all of the time allotted up for me doing that. And is that the best use of my time and your budget? Probably not. So I think it's a balance in terms of how much you're going to get back from that. Most of the businesses that I work with, in all honesty, posting 1 to 2 times a week on the LinkedIn company page is absolutely fine. Some of the founders can be really sporadic and there's probably a school of thought saying that's not the right way to do things. But I just think people have got so much on, you know, LinkedIn, just it cannot always be top of your list compared to, for example, doing an investor pitch or spending time talking to customers. That type of thing is always going to be way more valuable. So it's just balance, I think. It's a really vague answer to your question.
Yeah, I mean, well, probably because it does depend on so many factors, doesn't it? One of it is the algorithm, which is great. And LinkedIn says, yeah, you should post every day and you'll get great reach. But then to do that, you have to have content. And it's about then that balance, because we're talking about specifically social media today, but social media is part of the bigger strategy, isn't it? So you have to do something that is actually practical and achievable, because there's nothing worse, I find, is if you're posting every day and then obviously you don't post for like 2 months, because you're either burnt out or you just run out of content because you've been posting so much. You're like, oh yeah, I haven't spread it out much that, but I've done like every day for the last 4 months and now I've got nothing new to actually put on there. Of course, you can repurpose the content. Yeah, it's just about finding that time. And you know, because we've talked in depth about LinkedIn, but if they're social media platform you think from a B2B point of view, if that's what obviously is your expertise, is more effective than others?
So I'm very intrigued by TikTok. I had to get rid of it just because I thought I could get sucked in for hours and hours and hours because it's so addictive. I'm not an expert in this area, but I know that in terms of B2B, you can experience really, really huge growth just because not many creators are on there creating B2B content. It's really booming at the moment. So I think, you know, if you're great on video and you're happy to sort of do, you know, quick videos, throw them together, put them on there, or you've got a huge, you know, back catalog of video, definitely get on there. I think it's a really, really exciting platform and definitely one that you can experiment with. I just think in terms of my own brain, that there's only so much social media that I'm sort of again willing to sort of spend my day on. That I think will be the next big thing in terms of B2B.
That's interesting, actually. I do quite a bit of video. And I know someone said to me, oh, I'll be your manager. You need to get on TikTok. And I said, no chance. I said, I just have one. Because the videos I do, I mean, I do them when I feel I've got something to say, as opposed to saying, well, I'm now going to have video a week or a video every so often. And I just thought, I'm just similar to you. I had TikTok, but I deleted it for exactly the same reason, because I got, you get on it. And I remember I was on it in the gym. And I think I can't remember what machine I was on, but like half an hour later, I've just been scrolling through videos and I think, I've probably done this for about 6 hours. So I thought, just for my own sanity, I don't think I should be on this. But I think you're right, because I think that most people, and this is where social media always starts, most people think, oh, TikTok's just like little videos of people videoing someone falling over or something, or just pure influencers, whereas I don't think businesses do anything on there, which obviously probably missing a trick, because there's lots of people on TikTok and there's lots of your customers on TikTok, and you're probably right, actually. It's an area where, because most people aren't on it, if you're doing business stuff on it, you're going to get more traction, because you'll be quite unique in that space, which is actually, you just made me think, I might speak to my mate again and say, oh yeah, you can stick that on TikTok. On the base of this, I might actually re-download TikTok and put a few of my older videos on there and see what happens.
Yeah, the problem with me is it's just so addictive. And I think I'm bad enough with Instagram sometimes, but I'm constantly deleting the app from my phone because I think, oh, I've just had enough of this today. I keep checking it. And I think, I can't add another app to my roster of things that drive me slightly mad every day.
Do you use any automated tools at all? Because I know back in the day, I'm talking a long time ago, if you used automated tools on Facebook had algorithms to be able to tell that you weren't manually posting. So it was always a competition between the tool makers who were trying to make sure that it mimicked manual posting and Facebook trying to identify whether or not you were really manually posting. What have you found the best way to manage? Is it automation? Is it doing it manually? What would your advice be?
Yeah, the tricky thing with the automation tools is that you can't always do everything on them. So for example, on LinkedIn, you can't sort of tag individual people. So if I'm doing a post, which for whatever reason has to tag a person, I have to do it manually. Likewise, under the little PDF sliders that you can do on LinkedIn, you can't do those in advance either. So I do try and schedule in advance as much as possible, especially because I manage sort of 4 to 5 businesses' LinkedIn accounts. So it can get a bit, difficult to manage if you've got lots and lots and lots. But yeah, unfortunately, there's only so much that you can schedule in advance, just because, the API is not there, basically, which will let you do certain tasks on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I'm hoping I'll check. I use Spark Social a bit. Yeah, you can't do the apps, but you can do some like companies, but you can't do individuals.
Yeah.
You can't do polls, which is really irritating because I quite like a poll. And then actually until about 3 months ago, you couldn't actually even attach videos. They've now allowed you to attach native videos. Obviously, you could always attach YouTube links, but you couldn't attach a native video. So they've started doing that, which has been quite helpful. Because you're right. If I'm going on holiday, or I'm going to be busy next week, for example, then you want to get a few posts up, because you're just not going to have time to do it. And that's obviously not the same with yourself, because you're managing multiple accounts. So a bit of a necessity, I would suggest. So we talked about this at the outset, that lots of people find it difficult because they're scared of it, genuinely, and they don't realize how much work is there and they're not sure how to do it. So would you say that with the right guidance and advice, people can do it on their own quite easily? And if the answer is yes, where should they go to get support and training on that? And if the answer is no, then apart from yourself, of course, what's the way to go?
I think there's loads of LinkedIn experts out there. I can send you a list of my favourites, and they'll do content almost every single day about how to post on LinkedIn, and they'll have newsletters about how to create content. So I'd say, if you've got lots of money, you can spend money on course and training, but you don't really have to do that because the information is definitely out there. So I would spend sometimes, or looking and learning and listening. I think the other crucial thing is that it's really important to spend time engaging as well as creating content. So if you're just a broadcast tool, that's fine. But I think it's really important to, once you log into the platform, is to spend time commenting on other people's posts and interacting with them, and also seeing what your, you know, what your peers or your competitors are doing, which is working really well. Not copy them, but just say, oh, right, that personal story works really well for them. Maybe I could do a personal story, or that poll was really good. That's interesting to know. Maybe we can do a similar poll. So I would say don't rush into it. I would say do spend some time sort of looking at what other people are doing, and then just spend some time educating yourself as well from a reputable source. It can be quite hard to figure out, I think, what's legit and what's not, because there's a lot of people, as there is in sort of all walks of life, claiming to be experts in all sorts of things. But LinkedIn's pretty good at sort of identifying who's a really, really good expert and sort of labeling them so, and sponsoring them and so on.
Ah, that was the next question I was going to say. What are those red flags that you'd look out for? I'm looking for a LinkedIn expert, and I do get the inundated. That's my bloody inbox and my emails are getting ridiculous. But how do you discern who you should be listening to? Because one of the things you mentioned there was that LinkedIn helps identify. So just talk to me about that a bit.
Yeah, so I think it's people who say things like they'll guarantee you results, or they want to charge you a lot of money. I think it's kind of the same in all walks of life. I think if someone say, I can get you from like 0 to 1 million in a really short space of time, that's definitely a red flag. If someone's saying, okay, let's do this in a really consistent way, let's test and learn, let's do things in a resource measured, planned that way, that's generally a good sign, I think, in many areas of business that someone is legit. So yeah, LinkedIn's got potentially a maker or creator program that they've recently launched. And one of my friends actually is on that. So they've sort of been labeled as LinkedIn experts. I can send through some info on that because I'm a little bit vague on it. But yeah, there's a few names that come to mind. So there's a guy called John Espirian. He's a really, really good LinkedIn expert. And he has a community that you can join as well. And there's another lady called Jen Corcoran, and she's another LinkedIn expert that I follow as well. Then sort of my two favorites. And then there's a guy called Richard Vandblom, and he produces these amazing algorithm reports, which is all about basically best ways to use LinkedIn. And he does that based on like months and months and months and months of testing, so like very data analytics heavy, but he pulls out all the really interesting stuff.
And then from your point of view, obviously you work across platforms and with different people, which platform have you got your greatest successes from?
LinkedIn. Like, I wouldn't have a business without LinkedIn. So one of the first things I did when I launched my business in June 2020 was to put a post-it saying, I'm here, I've quit my job, my business is ready. I had the post got a reach of about 8,000, which for me at the time was unheard of. I had less than 1,000 connections, and two or three people messaged me directly saying, I want to work with you. And of those three, two became clients. And ever since then, whenever I've done, you know, a more sort of sales focused LinkedIn post, I've always picked up clients off the back of that. So I actually refrain from posting too much because I'm normally at capacity at the best of times. And I think if I post too much, I won't be able to do all the work that would come my way. So I sort of space it out. But if I know I've got, a gap coming up, it's a really good way for me of getting business, purely because I've just collected people over the years. So I joined LinkedIn in 2010. I've always been really friendly, kept in touch with everyone that I've worked with, people that I've met at conferences, all sorts of things. And I've used it to recommend other people and put people in touch. I think I've had a lot of good karma, and then that's come my way as well. And I'm always looking on there, you know, if there's opportunities, I can either I can pitch for, or I can recommend somebody else. And I think it's a really good tool in terms of, you know, looking for new clients. The information's there. You have to be able to find it. That's why I always say, yes, create content, but also your feed is a business tool, and you should definitely make sure that you're following the right people and the right pages. So that is a really, really good resource for you, so that every morning you go on there and you're getting, you know, your industry news, you're seeing what's happening, you know, with people that you know in the industry, and ideally you're seeing job opportunities or business opportunities as well.
Yeah, that's really good advice. What would be the three key things you'd recommend that people should do if they want to try and generate business through social media? If you gave me your top three things.
So number one would be get your profile looking good. So really good photo that represents who you are. You know, your headline is actually searchable. So don't just put a job title, put what it is that you do, and sort of, you know, you can make it quite long. So for example, if you're a coach, make sure the word coaching is in there as well. And, you know, that your about section is filled out so that people can sort of see, you know, what it is that you offer and who you are. So that's the first thing. The second thing is get your feed cleaned up. So if you've connected with lots of random people and you've accepted all sorts of requests and your feed is just rubbish, you can unfollow those people. So I would just go through and make sure you're following people that you want to hear from, companies that you want to hear from, and, you know, need resources that are really useful to you. So you might need to do, you know, sort of a follow a call and get that cleaned up. And then I think make sure it's really clear what it is that you do and what you've got to offer. So if you're not telling people what it is that you're either selling, offering, they're not going to know about it. So don't shy away from doing that either. And you can do that in lots of ways. I think it's well worthwhile every now and then just doing, I think, quite a salesy post, which is right. This is how you can work with me. These are the things that I offer. Not every time, but every now and then. I think it's a really, really valid reminder. Because it is quite simple. It's so easy to forget what it is that someone does, or, you know, what they do for a living.
I was just going to say, I needed a balance there, because obviously some people, it's about every post is sales. It's about me, 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 me. How great am I? You want to work with me? And then you've got other people who do the complete opposite. I, they never tell you what they're doing. They're just always giving you content of, you know, great stuff and great information about industry news. What would you say the kind of the balance there that you should be trying to strike between the two extremes?
Yeah, it's really individual. I'm now thinking back to when I last did a sales post. It's probably quite a long time ago now. So I think maybe every 1 to 3 months is probably a good time to just do a bit of a reminder of this is who I am and what I do. And obviously, you know, you even burst that with stories and case studies and, you know, nice things. Not everything has to be like sell, sell, sell. But I think if there's zero selling, you're not going to be known for those things. So I would say every 1 to 3 months, because that's what I would recommend to a client, or I'd add that post in maybe, you know, every quarter or so. Let's just do a recap of what it is that you've actually, you know, what you actually do.
And then what would be your top three things you'd say that people shouldn't do?
Spammy posts. So I don't really like the clickbaity ones where it's all kind of, I don't know, you feel a little bit deceived. I think that ruins trust as well. You know, things that have got like a really misleading headline because they want you to click and sort of read below it. I think it works, but it definitely doesn't really build trust with your customers. So I definitely avoid that. Your poor quality photography and videos and graphics. I think if you haven't got good ones, don't use them at all. Just rely on text. Sometimes you see something and think, I don't know why you bothered spending however long creating that. You might as well have just not used it, because I just think it can look really, really damaging. And then I think just failing to engage with others as well. I think if you're expecting other people to interact with you, but you don't interact with them, unless you're, you know, Richard Branson, which most of us aren't, that's never going to work. People will get fed up and they'll stop, you know, engaging with your content.
Well, nothing really important on that, isn't it? The clue's in the name social. And if you're just using it as a one-way medium, and we talked about before when you're talking about the pages, as a broadcast medium, if you've got a personal page and people are commenting on your posts and you're not sort of like responding to them, all that's going to happen is they're going to stop commenting on your posts. What someone said to me was that actually also, you know, just as you were saying before in terms of following the right people, that you should be commenting on other people and their content as well. And interestingly enough, you know, one of the guys that I interviewed, Chris Hurst, who wrote No Bullshit Leadership, it's a fantastic book, actually. And the only reason that I got him on the podcast and I started chatting to him is because I think, did he comment on, I wrote something about that and read the book, and then he commented on my post, and then I then started just chatting to him, and then I asked him after a bit of interaction about whether or not he'd come on my podcast, and he said yes. And had I not been interacting with him, that could never have happened. And, you know, and prior to that, and that gave me quite a bit of confidence, actually, because I started thinking, so even though he's a big author and he's worked for all these massive companies, they're all just humans, actually. And if you're interacting with them on LinkedIn and they want to interact, then naturally you can get them on podcasts and all sorts of things. So I think that engagement is a real key one, actually, in terms of, you know, it's a social platform, so you can't just ignore people.
There's a whole world of social, like, behind closed doors. So things that happen in DMs and in private groups, for example. So actually, one of my things that you shouldn't do would actually is not send spammy messages to people. Everyone hates them and they don't work, which is kind of a universal of that. But I will say, you know, in most cases, what's great is if someone can see your post, not like it and not comment, but they might message you.
Yeah.
And to the outside world, they might think, well, that post is a failure because no one interacted with it. But if someone's messaged you, that's almost like the highest level of accolade that you can get, because you're in a personal conversation with somebody off the back of some content that you've done. So I think, yeah, it's kind of a whole hidden world. It's sort of this, you know, how we interact in private on social media, which is another thing to focus on as well.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it's just the world we live in. Everyone wants all of their interactions to be seen by everybody else. And I'm always saying, well, actually, if you can get them into a DM or you can get them off that platform.
Yeah.
But that's another thing I always say, because I remember having a conversation with someone who's got loads of people on Instagram. I remember she's got about 100,000 people followers on Instagram, and she's doing well. And I just said to her, I said, so what happens if Instagram blocks your account, for example? I said, have you got a mailing list? No. Right. I said, that's a bit of a concern, actually. I said, because these platforms are fantastic. I said, but the algorithms, they could change it tomorrow and then you're not getting any reach, or they just block your account for some reason. And then all of a sudden, all your customers or people you've been interacting with, you've got no way of reacting with them. So I always say to people that, you know, as much as possible, you want DMs and you want to take people off of those platforms so that you've got that personal connection with them, as well as having them on the platform. I don't know if that's my own personal view. I don't know if that's a view that you share or if that's...
Yeah, no, it's like, Mark, that's a real marketing best practice, is to not rely on social media. So yeah, you don't own your account. You do not own the content on there. I don't think you even own the contacts. It's really important to have multiple channels. And in most cases of my clients, definitely an email newsletter is really strongly advised as just part of the mix. And also having a way to contact, you know, your audience directly. I've even started one now because I thought, you know what, I do so much on LinkedIn. I mean, I always get lovely feedback. I thought I need to have, and again, I do newsletters for 4 or 5 clients as well. And I thought, I've done this for years and years and years and years. I really want to have my own. So again, I'm quite sporadic with it, but it's really nice to know that I've got that as another string to my bow. So I've got my website, I've got some platforms that I blog on, I've got LinkedIn, and then I've got my newsletter too. So I would always say, definitely do that.
I was just going to say, interestingly enough, I mean, because obviously LinkedIn relatively recently started, when you write an article, you can actually start a newsletter. And it's very interesting because it's, can see why they've done it, because they get more interaction. And I've started a newsletter, and it's really interesting because they don't really give you any data on the newsletter.
No, they don't,
I was looking at it recently when I was writing I was writing my third one. And all of a sudden it says, you have, let's say, 400 subscribers, and I'm thinking,
yeah,
where are they then? Because I'm thinking, God, no, I don't know where they came from. I don't know when they signed up, because there's no notifications or anything. So I think it's obviously driving traffic for LinkedIn, but it's not doing anything for me. But I think that'd be quite nice, those 400 subscribers in my own list, rather than 400 subscribers on LinkedIn. I'm thinking, oh, I started emailing those people, but, oh, thanks for signing up for my newsletter. Let me know why you signed up, because there's no information about it at all. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, so again, that could give you some really artificial stats. So I am signed up to quite a few of those, and I have some clients that do them too. And what I often find is that I read their newsletter in my inbox, and I will not interact with it on LinkedIn.
Yes.
But some clients say my newsletters are getting hardly any interaction, but there's no way of knowing how people are consuming them. There's a very good chance that all 400 people read it in their inbox and, you know, have a great experience, but then will never go back to your LinkedIn post and like it or comment. So it's quite difficult. But I do think that function is still quite new. It's in its infancy. So who knows if LinkedIn will give us more stats to see if it's working or not.
Yeah,
I think I would definitely have a separate newsletter as well as that, because your newsletter that you have on MailChimp, for example, will give you stats about who's opened it, who's clicked, who's unsubscribed, and that sort of data.
Yeah, no, I feel that's much, much better, to be honest. All right, so we've come to the end of our hour, and it's been a great pleasure. Just to leave us with one thing that if everyone's listened to this and they've been making tea or whatever they've been doing and they've not really been listening, which shouldn't happen, but if that was the case, what's the one thing you'd say, right, if you listen to nothing else, if you haven't got anything else, this one take home that I want you to take away with you today is ...
I'd say don't overthink it. Just experiment and see what works.
Perfect.
That to me is the main barrier, is often wanting perfection and wanting to record the video 10 times. No, just experiment. You can always delete it.
I think that's such good advice, actually. Nowadays, I think people like to see, I'm not saying that you need to be super bad, but people like to see authenticity. And perfection isn't authenticity, you know, perfectly airbrushed video with models in it and all that sort of stuff is not really authentic in any shape or form. People like to see, especially when you're small business, that's even big businesses, people connect with people and they want to see who you are, really, rather than the image of you. I very much concur with that. Just try it out, see how it goes. And as you said, if it's not that great, you can delete it. No one's going to be get over yourself. People aren't sitting there waiting. They're waiting for your next video and thinking, oh, that's not the last one, is it? So yeah, just get it done. So no, I appreciate that. I appreciate your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. You've given us some really good insights, I think. I'll chat to you offline about getting some of those links that you mentioned, you know, because I wrote down often some of those people. The chap that you mentioned who does the algorithms was very interesting as well. So,
yeah,
I'll get to those and I'll drop them into the podcast description when I launch it. So now, thank you very much, Richard.
Yeah, thank you so
great
much.
To see
really
you again.
Thanks. Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me. That was a really fun chat. I really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. So there you have it. If you're nervous about trying to utilize social media in your business, there is obviously no need to be anymore. Veronica's simple and down-to-earth approach should set you on your way. I really liked her simple takeaways and the way she broke it out, i.e. no spammy posts. Always make sure you put good quality content out there. She gave advice also about how to create content and what sort of content you should be creating. And I really hope that you found this useful, as social media in business can be a minefield and people get very nervous about it. Remember to check out the links to the resources that we discussed and that Veronica talked about, which you'll find in the podcast description. Don't forget, as always, to check out the show notes at www.thesalesaccelerationformula.com. And as always, subscribe, like, and share with your friends, colleagues, and anyone else who you think may be interested. But most of all, please keep the feedback coming so that we can continue to improve and give you more of what you like. Hope you really enjoyed this and enjoyed it as much as I did. Keep listening and keep growing.